Arm Aronson of the Total Sports Recall Podcast here to share a winning strategy for Father's Day from our partners at Sterling Roastery. If your dad treats his morning coffee like a pregame ritual, you need to introduce him to the Sterling Roastery lineup. This isn't that stale, over-roasted stuff sitting on our grocery shelf. Sterling roasts their beans multiple times a week for unbeatable freshness. The smart play? A coffee subscription. He gets to choose his grind, from French press to espresso, and his favorite roast, depth. It's a world-class lineup of Java that shows up like a reliable veteran on a perennial powerhouse team. Go to sterlingsoap.com and set him up. He'll thank you with every cup. That's sterlingsoap.com.
You know, 2025 saw the Ivy League teams finally start to get bowl positions and go and play in some postseason games. It hasn't happened for a long time. But we have one instance of almost 90 years ago where Harvard was invited to the Rose Bowl. We're going to talk about it with Timothy P. Brown of footballarchaeology.com, who wrote a recent article about this 1936 happening. Tim's up in just a moment to tell us all about it.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time.
Before we get into our episode today, let's take the time to drill that football right into the like and subscribe button on your console so you know exactly when the notifications come up of the latest releases of Pigskin Dispatch podcast for some more great football history. Now on to our episode. Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pigpen, your portal to positive football history. And welcome to another edition where we talk with Timothy P. Brown of footballarchaeology.com about some football from antiquity. Tim, what do you have for us tonight?
Well, I have a story which I'm going to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
All right. So help you God. And now that you can take your hand off the Bible now, then we'll get your testimony underway for your story that you wrote a little while ago called Harvard's 1936 Rose Bowl Invitation. Why don't you tell the tale, Tim?
Yeah, so this we've been doing, you know, because it's bowl season, we've been doing a couple different stories on bowls of late. But just as a reminder, if anybody missed earlier episodes, so when the bowls first got started, well, when the Rose Bowl got started, the Rose Bowl committee selected the teams to participate. And then once they, you know, they basically reached an agreement that they would always invite the champion of the Pacific Coast Conference. And then basically the responsibility for the invitation transferred to them. So the team or the athletic director of whoever was the PCC representative, they got to choose whoever they wanted to, you know, from typically, you know, from the eastern side of the country. So that was the case back in 1936. And so during the 36, or it would have been the 35 season, Cal Stanford and UCLA tied for the Pacific Coast Championship. But then they, for one way or another, Stanford got the invitation. So then it became Stanford's decision in terms of who they were going to invite. And in, during that season, the top teams were Minnesota, SMU, Princeton, TCU, and LSU. The Big Ten barred postseason play, and so Minnesota was out, and Princeton was part of an agreement that said they can't do postseason play either. So they were out. So, and as it turned out, several of the contending teams had Thanksgiving Day games. You know, back then, Thanksgiving Day games were a bigger deal than they are now. But and so Harvard lost to Yale in their last game of the season, the weekend before Thanksgiving, leaving them at a 3-6 record. So kind of is a little bit strange, but William Bingham, who was Harvard's athletic director at the time, he received a telegraph from Stanford's athletic director, a guy named Alfred Masters, So he gets a telegraph from this guy inviting Harvard to participate in the Rose Bowl. And they're like, "What? What the heck?" I mean, the invitation wasn't always to the best team. Typically, it was, certainly one of the better teams, but there might have been one reason or another why you'd want to invite somebody else. And so, Harvard was like, "What the? This makes no sense." But anyways, the Harvard athletic director writes back and he says, I'm going to read this verbatim. Harvard regrets it cannot accept your bowl invitation this year. Due to the Harvard-Yale-Princeton agreement, we are unable to engage in any postseason games. It will be impossible next year because our present policy extends until 1938. Good luck on New Year's Day. Okay. So he telegraphs this response to Stanford, and the Stanford athletic director gets this thing and he's surprised that Harvard turned him down because he never invited Harvard. So, all of a sudden he's getting this response from Harvard that he's like, why are they sending me a response? So, the Stanford athletic director probably would have like been quiet about it and, kind of kept it under wraps and somehow reached out to Harvard. But someone, whoever was kind of behind this whole thing had also sent basically a similar telegraph to the Stanford student newspaper and signed it under a fake name as the editor of Harvard's newspaper. So no one's ever really figured out who was behind all this stuff. But, it's this whole thing where somebody pulls off this prank or hoax of, basically tricking Harvard's athletic director into thinking that they got invited to the Rose Bowl. And Stanford's like, what the heck? We didn't invite you guys. You're 3-6.
It could have been worse if he accepted the offer and made plans and Harvard's showing up out there and now you have three teams to play one game.
So anyways, Stanford then ends up inviting SMU. But it's funny that you say, well, that's what if they'd accepted? Because in doing the research for this story, I came across a high school, Cassopolis, here in Michigan. And in the sometime in the 1950s, their high school band received an invitation to march in the Rose Bowl parade. So these kids are just ecstatic, all excited, and they start, holding fundraisers to raise the money to, ship all these kids out there to Pasadena. And at one point the principal was like, we haven't heard from these guys. Maybe we ought to check this out. And so he contacts the Rose Bowl people and says, hey, we've got the invitation. Can you give us specifics on the arrangements, hotels, that kind of thing? And the Rose Bowl's like, we didn't invite you. So here's this high school goes through all this stuff, basically the same kind of scenario, but so who, it might have been a rival band, a rival high school or something that sent them the invitation, but that one was fake too. So I just think, I'm sure somebody's feelings were hurt, but I still think it's pretty funny.
There's a lot of pranking going on in football back well, for decades, all the way into the 60s. We had some good pranks going during bowl season. So it's not just for April Fool's Day. The pranks will come out in bowl season too. So that's, and it makes some interesting stories, 70, 80, 100 years later to talk about
Here we are having a
on a
laugh
football history
about
podcast,
getting pranked.
Absolutely. So this is, just one of those unique stories that you don't hear anywhere else except for in football archaeology realm. And we appreciate you sharing it with us. But you have other items and little tidbits that you call them that you write about. And what can you tell people where they can take in some of these?
Yeah, just go to footballarchaeology.com. It's a Substack site. You can subscribe, in which case you'll get an email every time that I publish a new story, and the email contains the story itself. If you don't want the emails, just follow me on Substack, follow me on Blue Sky, because I post there every time, or just bookmark it and show up kind of whenever you want to. But if you want to make sure you at least have a chance to see it, best thing is to subscribe.
All right, Tim. Well, we really appreciate you taking some time out during this busy season of football to take time to tell us about some football of the past. And we'd love to talk to you again next week.
Very good. Look forward to it.
That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hi, everyone. There's a new podcast in town, Statman and Robin. We are the dynamic duo of Baltimore sports history.
We have lots of stories to tell about the great and not so great teams and players in Baltimore's rich sports history, and some of the more obscure ones too.
We grew up together with these teams and players, and we'll add our experiences to these great stories.
Yep, we were there for a lot of them. Join us here on the Sports History Network.